The following episode of Cave Voice was recorded at midnight, October 23rd, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Resist!
Hi. Thanks for listening to Cave Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. Let's check in with our friends in Congress, shall we?
See what those crazy kids are up to.
Believe it or not, both the House and Senate are back in session.
Oh my god, they have to work this week? What?
The House will start this week with bills to strengthen the ability of Congress to enforce subpoenas issued by committees and provide border agents with devices to detect fentanyl and other narcotics. On Wednesday and Thursday, the House is expected to consider the Senate-passed budget resolution. You know, the one that's supposed to add over $1 trillion to the deficit while cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and other essential programs. Yeah, that one. They're also moving on a bill to promote transparency in regulatory decrees, along with legislation sanctioning Iran for its ballistic missile program and Hezbollah for terror activities, which is going to make Iran more likely to want to pull out of the Iran deal. But it may be necessary. I don't know. It's not my, department. Also, Republicans are acting like seventh grade cool kids who live to screw with kids not in the clique. Republican partisan sniping is all the rage. I was not a cool kid in seventh grade. Okay, any grade for that matter. You get used to living on the defensive. For example, H.R. 732. So this legislation comes up for a vote on Tuesday, and it stops the Justice Department from requiring corporate settlements to be paid to unrelated activist groups. You know, like the way cigarette companies fund non-smoking campaigns. It's called Stop Settlement Slush Funds Act of 2017. It's going to pass because, you know, Republicans. But here's the thing. The guy who wrote the legislation, Representative Bob Goodlatte, Republican of Virginia, cited lack of congressional oversight regarding how the funds from these settlements are allocated to nonprofit groups as a primary reason for introducing the bill. Quote, "This bill is oversight in action. Congress must not tolerate Justice Department political appointees using settlements to funnel money to their liberal friends." Unquote.
Na-na-na boo-boo, stick your head in doo-doo.
Are you kidding me? I'm going to let a commenter named Kristen answer this seventh grade attempt at legislation. Quote, "This is the problem with the country displayed in one bill. Republicans in Congress are so partisan that even the laws they make attack liberals rhetorically. They're incapable of leading the entire country like this, and the truth is they don't want to lead the entire country. They just want to make the world as nice as possible for their political supporters and fuck everyone else. As a person who, yes, identifies as liberal, I don't appreciate all lawmakers using liberal as some kind of insulting identifier. It's ludicrous that such behavior goes on in what should be a professional setting. Our country is becoming a joke because Republicans see politics as a game to win or lose and refuse to hear criticism. Instead, they tried to demonstrate their opponent's hypocrisy, sow confusion, and otherwise obfuscate the situation. This isn't sustainable. Sure, Republicans won the election, and sure, they can be huge jerks and do whatever they want within their power. But politics shouldn't be based on this idea. If one party wins, they should use their power to publicly denigrate their political opponents and haphazardly dismantle anything made by the other guy. I'm tired of having to be on the defensive constantly around Republicans. Do they ever tire of attacking people like me? As a trans woman here in North Carolina, I know all too well what it's like to fight against the government who doesn't respect you as a person, and I'm so fucking sick of it. Can you understand what it's like to just be casually accused of being a pedophile, a rapist, because you want to go pee? Can you see how irrational it is to equate the two? And yet, I had to defend myself in the public square because Republicans refuse to accept the idea that not everything is partisan and that objective facts do exist and those facts support only certain viewpoints. How long before Republicans in Congress start legislating directly against anyone they deem too liberal? This legislation normalizes the toxic partisan environment created by Republicans, and if we keep wasting time with such petty politics, the world will crumble away beneath our feet before we know it. And then there won't be elections to win. No minorities or liberals to mock and attack. Just a broken country that refused to care about all of its people. Unquote.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
So the Senate started to debate on a $36.5 billion disaster relief package that's already been passed in the House. It's not clear how soon the final package vote will come, and the rest of the Senate's agenda is yet to be announced. Since we're talking about the Senate, we have a call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Support the Alexander Murray, the ACA stabilization bill. In a deliberate move to sabotage the Affordable Care Act, Donald recently decided to stop payment of cost-sharing reduction subsidies to insurers selling healthcare.gov marketplace plans. These payments help insurers provide lower-cost health insurance plans on the exchanges. In anticipation of the low-cost CSR revenue, insurers have already increased the rates dramatically. For example, Pennsylvania's UPMC health plan was planning to increase premiums by 8% in 2018, until Donald threatened to discontinue the CSRs. Now the plan is increasing premiums by an average of 41% statewide.
41%!
Some insurers may even exit the exchanges entirely, further jeopardizing health insurance access for the 18 million Americans who buy their insurance plans through the ACA individual market. However, sane senators Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, and Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington, have announced a bipartisan bill to attempt to stabilize the ACA individual markets by reinstating CSRs for insurers for 2 more years. The bill would also create a low-cost catastrophic coverage exchange plan and reinstate $106 million in funding for ACA enrollment outreach funding, which Donald's administration has slashed in yet another attempt to undermine the ACA. In exchange, the bill would give states more flexibility and let insurers offer new types of insurance plans that are comparably affordable to existing ACA plans, just to make the Republicans happy. Most importantly, the bill would preserve ACA standards for what exchange plans must cover, preventing the erosion of protection for those with pre-existing conditions. As Senator Alexander himself stated of the bill, quote, "This agreement avoids chaos. I don't know a Republican or a Democrat who benefits from chaos," unquote. Congress must act quickly to pass this bipartisan effort to undo Donald's blatant sabotage of the ACA's individual market and prevent the loss of affordable health care for millions of Americans. Call your senator at 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121.
I need to make up a song for that phone number.
One more time. 202-225-3121. The Supreme Court is also busy this week. They're hearing a case out of Ohio,
a disproportionately important state in our electorate.
So Ohio wants to and has purged their voter rolls of inactive voters. They say it's to clean up the voter rolls, but what it does is purge many eligible voters. The plaintiff is Larry Harmon, an Ohio software engineer, who has lived in the same location for over 16 years but chose not to vote in a series of elections. He found out when he arrived to vote in 2015, but he had been struck from the voter rolls and, hate to surprise everyone, is not enacted in good faith.
What?
It is being used to disproportionately eliminate minority voters who may struggle to get to the polls due to work or transportation issues, or may simply sit out of elections due to a feeling of not being represented by the slate of candidates. A Reuters study found that significantly more Democratic voters were purged from the rolls in Ohio than Republican voters.
What?
Quote, "In the state's three largest counties, that include Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus, voters have been struck from the rolls in Democratic-leaning neighborhoods at roughly twice the rate as Republican neighborhoods." Unquote.
What?
According to Reuters, all U.S. states periodically purge their voter rolls, but only a handful, like Ohio, remove voters for not voting. They include, unsurprisingly, Ohio, Indiana, Louisiana, Alabama, and Oregon.
Excuse me, why?
If the Supreme Court does not stamp this law out, it won't be long before we see a rash of other states purging their minority voters.
What?
You know, Sabrina Tavernsay of the New York Times wrote a post-election dispatch that typified this line of analysis. Stop me if you've heard it. Quote, "Perhaps the biggest drags on voter turnout in Milwaukee, as in the rest of the country, were the candidates themselves. To some, it was like having to choose between broccoli and liver." Unquote.
Ouch.
I know Hillary Clinton was not everyone's first choice, and I am more than well aware that some people, even some who are listening, hate her. Okay, cool. But in a mad rush to hate on Hillary, I think something is not getting nearly enough press. Something far more important that has far-reaching consequences. Voter suppression. Yes, it has been talked about here or there, but maybe because it's not as sexy as Hillary bashing, it really hasn't gotten enough press. Mother Jones recently came out with an article about Wisconsin. Quote, "The impact of Wisconsin's voter ID law received almost no attention," unquote. And Media Matters, love them, check them out if you haven't, found that only 8.9% of TV news segments on voting rights from July 2016 to June 2017 discussed the impact voter suppression laws had on the 2016 election. While more than 70% were about Trump's false claims of voter fraud and non-citizen voting during the 2016 campaign, there were 25 presidential debates, but not a single one was about voter suppression. The media has spent countless hours on interviewing Trump voters, but almost no time reporting on disenfranchised voters. 9% of all registered voters in Wisconsin did not have the required forms of ID. Black voters were about 50% likelier than whites to lack these IDs because they were less likely to drive or be able to afford these documents required to get a current ID, and more likely to have moved from out of state. After the election, registered voters in Milwaukee County and Madison Dane County were surveyed about why they didn't cast their ballot. 11% cited a voter ID law and said that they didn't have the acceptable ID. Of those, more than half said the law was the main reason they didn't vote. According to the study's author, University of Wisconsin-Madison's political scientist Kenneth Mayer, that finding implies between 12,000 and 23,000 registered voters in Madison and Milwaukee, and as many as 45,000 statewide, were deterred from voting by the ID law. Its impact was particularly acute in Milwaukee, where nearly two-thirds of the state's African Americans live, 37% of them below the poverty line. Milwaukee is the most segregated city in the nation, divided between low-income and black areas and the middle-class white ones. Unquote. This guy, Neil Albrecht, Milwaukee's election director, says that 25 to 35% of the 41,000 decrease in voters, or somewhere between 10,000 and 15,000 voters, likely did not vote due to the photo ID requirement. He said, quote, "It's very probable that between the photo ID and the changes to voter registration, enough people were prevented from voting to have changed the outcome of the presidential election in Wisconsin," unquote. According to a comprehensive study by MIT political scientist Charles Stewart, an estimated 16 million people, 12% of all voters, encountered at least one problem voting in 2016. There were more than 1 million lost votes. 1 million lost votes, Stewart estimates, because people ran into things like ID laws, long lines at the polls, and difficulty registering.
Get them out of here!
Donald won the election by a total of 78,000 votes in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. But I pointed this out before, but it needs to be repeated. In Wisconsin, the intent of those who pushed for the voter ID laws was clear as day. On the night of the Wisconsin 2016 primary, GOP Representative Glenn Grothman, a backer of the law when he was in the state Senate, predicted that a Republican would carry the state in November, even though Wisconsin had gone for Barack Obama by 7 points in 2012. Here he is.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton is about the weakest candidate the Democrats have ever put up. And now we have photo ID, and I think photo ID is going to make a little bit of a difference as well.
What an asshole!
Something needs to be done. And we need a game plan. Luckily, there are really smart people out there. So far, the fight for voting rights has been fought in the courts, and the ACLU is on the case. But too often, cases have been defeated by conservative judges.
That is why you fail.
And now, as Donald and the Republicans work to turn the courts over to conservative extremists, this battleground is getting tougher. So, the former Missouri Secretary of State, Jason Kander, badass Afghanistan veteran, known for his 2016 Senate campaign ad in which he assembled a rifle blindfolded.
I'm Jason Kander, and Senator Blunt has been attacking me on guns. Well, in the Army, I learned how to use and respect my rifle. In Afghanistan, I'd volunteer to be an extra gun in a convoy of unarmored SUVs. And in the state legislature, I supported Second Amendment rights. I also believe in background checks so that terrorists can't get their hands on one of these. I approve this message because I'd like to see Senator Blunt do this.
Kander has a plan for the election. He founded Let America Vote, a voting rights nonprofit.
Let America Vote is the first political organization that is dedicated to waging and winning the political argument against voter suppression.
With Jefferson Beauregard Sessions at the helm of the DOJ, we need innovative people like Kander more than ever. Kander says, quote, "We need to expand our argument beyond the court of law."
It becomes very important that this fight expand to the court of public opinion.
There are millions of votes, in my opinion.
The president has said twice that illegal voters made up that difference.
Quote, "It has been a politically consequence-free exercise for voter suppressors. That has to change." Unquote.
Over the course of the next several years, what I'm concerned about is us, you know, if we don't act, seeing that a whole lot of Americans who are eligible, legal, registered voters aren't allowed to cast their ballot.
Let America Vote plans to open field offices in Georgia, Iowa, Nevada, New Hampshire, and Tennessee in 2018 to focus on electing pro-voting rights candidates for state legislature, secretary of state, and governor.
All politics is local! Local!
The group has signed up more than 65,000 volunteers and placed more than 100 interns and staffers in Virginia, which has a strict voter ID law, for the 2017 gubernatorial and legislative elections, with the goal of contacting 500,000 voters. Quote, "We're saying, if you're going to make it harder to vote, we're going to make it a lot harder for you to get reelected." Unquote. Amazing and fundamental to everything, right? We can sign petitions and protest or whatever to our heart's content, but until we find a way to get representatives to enact legislation and create change, we might as well be in a straitjacket banging our heads against padded walls. This effort is going to take an army. So, go to letamericavote.org, share your story, get updates, donate, and spread the word. Let's break ourselves out of this insane asylum. All right. On Facebook, I went on kind of a terror against the New York Times. But damn it, they deserve it right now. And not just right now. They deserve it. In July 2015, Newsweek ran this piece called "What the Hell is Happening at the New York Times?" Quote, "In March, the newspaper published a highly touted article about Hillary Clinton's use of personal email account that, as I wrote in an earlier column, was wrong in its major points. The Times public editor defended the piece, linking to a lengthy series of regulations that, in fact, proved the allegations contained in the article were false. While there has since been a lot of partisan hullabaloo about the email bogusgate, something had to be expected when the story involves a political party's presidential frontrunner. The reality remained that when it came to this story, there was no there there. And then on Thursday night, the Times dropped a bombshell. Two government inspectors general had made the criminal referral to the Justice Department about Clinton and her handling of emails. The story was largely impenetrable because at no point did it offer even a suggestion of what might constitute a crime. By Friday morning, the Times did what is known in the media trade as a skinback. The article now said the criminal referral wasn't about Clinton, but was about the department's handling of the emails. Still, it conveyed no indication of what possible crime might be involved. Unquote. The article goes on to lay out how even more irresponsible, mismanaged, and shoddy reporting followed in regards to Clinton's email gate. Like Clinton or hater, this should piss you off. So, dear New York Times, screw you. As if your rampant, excessive, disproportionate, and obsessive reporting on Hillary's emails was not enough throughout 2015 and 2016. You know what I'm talking about, New York Times. You know, because you wrote a half-hearted mea culpa before the end of the election season, only to come back with the headline just 10 days before the election that read, "New emails jolt the Clinton campaign in race's last days." Regardless of the fact that there was absolutely nothing to the story, and would have been slightly less egregious had the email coverage had not been notoriously followed up by this charming headline the week before the election. The week before the election, the headline read, "Investigating Donald Trump, the FBI sees no clear link to Russia."
Ha! Really?
As if all this wasn't enough, you have cornered the market on false equivalents and coming unfairly down on women. New York Times, you need to get yourself together, take a long, hard look at your reporting, and apologize to the whole country for being largely responsible for where we are now. And please, please, take a second look at your reporting this week and shove it up your ass. Sincerely yours, Kelly. P.S. Great work on Russiagate. I hope Washington Post beats you to the headline every time, but I appreciate your work. So here's what renewed my rage at them today. There's a piece by Michael D. Shear in the New York Times about the feud over our craptastic president's call to the widow of a fallen soldier. If you were out of the country and lost in a cave, the story goes like this. The sewer that leads our country spewed forth some crap over the phones to the widow of a soldier who was killed in Niger. The tone-deaf narcissist, that is our president, did it all wrong and couldn't even remember the soldier's name. And, according to the widow, the phone call made her cry, which is just about the worst thing a sitting president can do. Make a woman in a car on a way to pick up her dead husband's body cry. In the car was a family friend and Democratic Congressman Frederica S. Wilson, who heard the phone call on speaker. So long story short, it has been a week of feuding between the presidential sputtering sewage pipe and Frederica S. Wilson. And then, just for good measure, throw in Chief of Staff, former General Kelly, who has been lying about the congressman, and who, according to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the lying scumbag, is above being questioned. He works for us, Sarah. No one is above being questioned. So in comes the New York Times with this piece, which seemingly blames the black, unfairly maligned congressman. Quote, "Likewise, the nasty back and forth with Frederica S. Wilson, a Democratic congresswoman who is close to the soldier's family, might have dissipated had she not repeatedly disparaged Mr. Trump's intentions on national television, failing to extend him the benefit of the doubt the previous presidents had received." Unquote. Oh, really? She has not given Mr. Trump the benefit of the doubt that previous presidents had received?
What are they, new?
The benefit of the doubt?
I am going to lose my mind.
So it is the black woman's fault for defending herself and the wife of this soldier? She should have what? Kept her peace? Stayed quiet like a good little girl? And since I'm railing on the New York Times, also this week was this article called "Willing to Do Everything, Mothers Defend Their Sons Accused of Sexual Harassment." So these are the women who met with Betsy Bible-banging Christo-fascist Dominionist DeVos before she changed the Title IX rules regarding how sexual harassment was handled on campus, making it harder for victimized girls and boys to come forward after they have been assaulted. These women are not an equal and opposite voice. These women do not deserve a voice. Why do they deserve a platform the likes of the New York goddamn Times? The New York Times needs to check itself. And since I'm raging, why stop there? I'll give the New York Times a break. But okay, so every day, 46 children and teens are shot in murders, assaults, suicides and suicide attempts, unintentional shootings, and police intervention. Every day, 7 children and 7 teens die from gun violence. So this Colorado state senator, a Republican, Vicky Marble, drew national attention in 2013 after she seemed to draw a link between the health of black people and eating fried chicken and barbecue.
Diabetes is something that's prevalent in the genetic makeup, and you just can't help it. Although I gotta say, I've never had better barbecue and better chicken and ate better in my life than when you go down south and you, I mean, I love it and everybody loves it. The Mexican diet in Mexico.
Even the head of the state Republican Party and others criticized her words. Now, this controversial Republican was asked to speak to some Cub Scouts, because the Young Nazi Club, the Young Republicans? Oh, silly me, I'm sorry. The Boy and Cub Scouts of Making America Great Again have no problem having partisan controversial figures come talk to their boys. In an online video, the Scouts asked questions about why people wanted to vote for Obama just because he was black, and Trump's proposed wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. And then, one boy got up, an 11-year-old named Ames Mayfield, and he said that he was shocked that she sponsored a bill that allowed domestic violence offenders to own guns. And then he read a list of survey statistics about Americans' views on the issue and spoke about the trouble Las Vegas shooting victims would have paying their bills. He said, quote, "There's something wrong in our country where Republicans believe it is a right to own a gun, but a privilege to have health care. None of that makes sense to me," unquote. Ames also told Marble that he was, quote, "astonished that you blamed black people for their health problems," unquote. I love this kid! Well, the Cub Scouts don't so much, because he was kicked out of his den. Not the Cub Scouts, but his den. Pack leaders held a meeting with Ames' mother, Lori Mayfield, where they told her that her son was no longer a part of the den, saying the gun control was too political. Unlike only black people voting for Obama and border walls? Right. Well, the whole incident caught the attention of a leader in the fight for gun control, Gabrielle Giffords, who survived a gunshot wound to the head during a public appearance in 2012. She tweeted, quote, "This is exactly the kind of courage we need in Congress. Ames, call me in 14 years and I'll campaign for you." Unquote. Okay, I'm just about out of time, but here's a quick thought.
America is the kind of place where someone can get more offended at you calling them a racist than at the fact that they are a racist. And that's become like a new thing that I've stumbled across. People, how dare you call me a racist? And I go, well, how dare you be racist?
Trevor Noah, the definition of a white supremacist is a person who believes that the white race is inherently superior to other races and that white people should have control over the people of other races. A racist is a person who shows and feels discrimination or prejudice against people of other races, or who believes that a particular race is superior to another. So all of those at our government who engage in voter suppression are white supremacists, and we need not to be shy about calling them out on that. They are so much more than simply racist. They are white supremacists. They're suppressing minorities' power within their communities and suppressing minorities' voting power. They are white supremacists, period.
People try and trap you into being afraid of saying what the person is doing, as opposed to them being afraid of acknowledging the world that they're living in.
Thank you for listening to my show. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's crabdiving.com, under the K-Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get my podcast. You can also find my show on citizentruth.org. If you like some laughs with your politics, catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vile for all your progressive news 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Podcast. And be sure to follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. I put up the stories that I talk about on here, plus a whole lot more. Twitter, you can find me at Kelly, the Voice of Resistance, and on Facebook, you can find me at K, Voice of Resistance. Okay, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
K-Voice of Resistance!